I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Most of us walk through life interacting with people who skirt the edges of our social circles without realizing that they're as important as our intimates. They punctuate our days, but we take them for granted. Our coffee person and car mechanic, our co-workers and fellow volunteers, a golf buddy, a teacher, and most of our Facebook quote-unquote friends. They're all consequential strangers, people who bring novelty and information into our lives, allow us to exercise different parts of ourselves and open us up to new opportunities. They keep us healthy, are invaluable when we're sick, they fuel innovation and propel social movements and hasten the flow of new ideas, and they are vital in times of uncertainty. In this unprecedented examination of people who don't seem to matter, journalist Melinda Blau develops a concept sparked by the research of her collaborator, psychologist Karen L. Fingerman, PhD, who coined the term consequential strangers. Consequential Strangers presents the science of causal connection and chronicles its surprising impact on business, creativity, the work environment, our physical and mental health, and the strength of our communities. Journalist Melinda Blau, the voice of Consequential Strangers blog, as well as the author of the book, has been researching and reporting about relationships and social trends since the 70s. She has written more than 80 magazine pieces and a dozen other books, including the best-selling Baby Whisperer series. She also blogs for Psychology Today and More magazines. Psychologist Karen Fingerman, PhD, who coined the term consequential strangers, is a Berner Hanley Professor and Director of Adult Family Research at Purdue University, an internationally known scholar whose work focuses on social relationships, emotions, and aging. She has authored over 40 articles and chapters. Melinda and Karen, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on. I just want to say that I really enjoyed your book, and I absolutely adore the consequential strangers in my life. And Melinda, you write about your move from Manhattan to Massachusetts, and when people ask if you miss New York, you would say, I miss New Yorkers. And I can totally relate, because I'm from California, and I miss Californians, because I used to talk to everyone. And if you can just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, definitely. You know, when you walk down the street in New York, you encounter all the people that your service providers. You go into the butcher, and when I was living in New York, I remember from the time my children were little, the butcher would give my children slices of bologna, and I'd go into the greengrocer, and she knew that I liked Concord grapes, and she'd tell me, oh, we have them in for you. So it gives you a sense of being grounded in the neighborhood, and what I often say is that, you know, our intimates have our hearts and comfort us at home, but our consequential strangers give us a place to be in the world.
Yes, they definitely do.
And when I moved, at first I didn't know anybody in Northampton, you need to know, once you know enough consequential strangers to make a place feel like home, then you really are part of that new town. And it took me a while in Northampton because New England is a little different from New York. We did after about 9 months at Northampton, because also I work at home, so it's not like I could go to a job.
Exactly.
And have lunch with coworkers and make a social life that way. I really had to start from ground zero. And so I started just interviewing anybody that I interviewed on the phone who happened to be from the area. I would say, would you like to have coffee? And I went on what I called my acquaintanceship campaign.
Oh, yes.
That was years before I knew the term consequential strangers. And then, you know, when Karen and I met as consequential strangers, actually, because, you know, I at one point contacted her because she had done some research on mothers and daughters, and I was writing about them at the time.
Major research meeting, and my area of interest has been on how social ties improve old age and actually help you live longer. There's a lot of good evidence on that. And researchers were talking about things that social partners do for you. They everything from, you know, making you feel good emotionally to taking you to the doctor. And it occurred to me that there are a lot of other kinds of social ties. And in fact, we spend most of our time with people who are not intimates, that we are not heavily invested in. And I thought, what are all those people doing for us, and do they matter? And I began to write about it from a scholarly perspective, and discovered more and more that, yes, in fact, they do matter in very different ways. And I don't want to negate the fact that our intimates are, you know, obviously the most important. They're the people you care the most about, but that doesn't negate the fact that everybody else that you interact with also is having an effect on you in many different ways.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, you know, right now everyone I know is so busy. Like, all of my intimates are incredibly busy. I don't really see my friends, but I do see my consequential strangers. Yeah. And that's what's, like, I see Alex at Whole Foods. Like, I go there at least a few times a week, and I know I'm going to see him, and I look forward to it, or some of the other people that work there. But, like, some of my closest friends, like, we might email or say hello, but I don't see them in person. We're all so busy, and I think that's really interesting as well.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That's true for most of our lives, most of us nowadays, you know, even in families, you know, everybody's off, the kids are off doing their activities, and they're with consequential strangers, their coaches, their teachers, you know, some of their classmates are good friends, but some of them are, they're consequential strangers, and the mother and father each are, you know, going off in different directions, and we are all surrounded by these large number of people, whether it's people we pray or play with, you know, it's just not our intimates. So
yeah, and there's also a lot that can be learned as well from the consequential, from your consequential strangers. You write in the book, quote, "We acquire social smarts mostly through consequential strangers, individuals in our convoys who are different from us." Now I should get back and ask about what is a convoy, and then what kind of things are people able to learn that they might not learn from their intimates.
Well, a convoy, that term was started in the research literature in psychology by one of my former mentors, Toni Antonucci at University of Michigan. And when she was first doing her research on relationships, she put in the analogy of a convoy, which if you think of the truckers or go back to World War II and the ships, which is, you know, how it also is in the literature, the idea would be that if you in battle needed to get a ship across the ocean, you'd surround it with other ships and have them go in a convoy
that
one would get there. And then you have the truckers, and, you know, the actually just went on YouTube and showed this to my class the other day, a little YouTube of the convoy song. And the idea there is that you have the truck going down the highway surrounded by other trucks, but some of them get off and some of them come back on. And in the convoy of your relationships, your closest intimates, your kids, your romantic partner, are likely to travel with you for very long distances in your life, and maybe always. But some of the people in your convoy will get on and off of that convoy and will keep changing. So it's a very dynamic process. But it is a group of people who are going through life with you and helping you and buffering you against life stresses and enhancing your well-being. And in that model, you can add in the idea of consequential strangers, the people on the edges and at the periphery.
Yeah, you know, and speaking about stresses, you write about chronic illness and how it can be a lonely experience. And you write, "Memoirs of adversity and triumph show us how other people make sense of difficult chapters in their life stories, and we're drawn to them because we are constantly in the process of rewriting and reassessing our own autobiographies." And I thought that was so true. I just interviewed an amazing woman named Terry Chaney, and she wrote a great book called Manic, a Memoir, and it was fascinating. My mother passed away 15 years ago. I went to a support group, and it was so helpful. And I didn't know any of these people, but I felt some of my friends weren't really, you know, they want to support you, they know what to say, but people going through it can relate.
Right. They know, the fellow sufferers know the territory, or someone who's been through the same experience in ways that your intimates can't possibly know, and that's one of the great advantages in health of consequential strangers. I interviewed dozens of people who had either chronic illnesses or some tremendous crisis in their life, whether it was death or, you know, the death of a loved one, and all of them talked about going to a support group or meeting someone. It didn't even have to be in a group setting. Just someone else who had gone through it makes such a difference. I know in my own life I have a friend who is a diabetic, and she, everyone around her for years was begging her to consider going on the pump because there had been such good press about the diet, you know, the pump. And she wouldn't hear of it. "I don't want anything hanging off my body. I'm not interested." And lo and behold, what it took was a consequential stranger. Sometimes, as much as we love our intimates, we're used to them. They become kind of like we can finish their sentences. And intimates tend to say the same thing over and over. Try it, you know. But a new person you're often more polite to, it's fresh. It's something that you really pay attention to. And in health, it made a big difference. And she ended up going on the pump because of a consequential stranger.
Oh, that's terrific.
Her life as well.
Oh, that's great. And again, you know, now with the web and Facebook, and I'm also, for my daughter, I'm on a, because she's on the autism spectrum, and so I'm on a support group for that, and that really helps. So I think the virtual, you know, social world is really helpful as well.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know you write about that. And another thing that I love in your book is you have a chapter called Being Spaces, and you write, quote, the fact is that when we're in a space that encourages us to slow down, we relax and have a greater chance of connecting. And you talk about a place called Annie's Garden and Gift Store in Amherst, Massachusetts, and that that's a place that encourages people to come together and to linger and hang around and create those consequential stranger experiences.
Right, and you know, there are many places like that. One of the precursors for that chapter was a book by Ray Oldenburg, a sociologist, who coined the term third place, meaning it's not work and it's not home, it's a third place where you can relax, and he talked about taverns and...
Yeah, I was thinking about Cheers when you said...
Cheers, exactly. So. Cheers is the quintessential being place, because, you know, it's the song even said, where everybody knows your name.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only where you see those people. Those are called anchored relationships. They're of that place. I walk along a dog path in Northampton, Massachusetts, and I see people, and sometimes we have very deep conversations. I might not even know their names. I know the dog's name.
Yeah, me too.
I know a lot of the details about their lives, and that's a being space for me. Annie's Garden is certainly like that, and there many cafes are like that. I talk about in the book a softball field where people come together once a week over a 3-month period and watch the relationships develop as, you know, they start sitting a little closer to each other on the bleachers, and this is a place where it was safe and it was quiet and people could get private time for themselves if they went off in a little, you know, kind of circle by themselves. So relationships started to develop, and that's what happens, you know, all over in various aspects of our lives.
Yeah, and Karen, you had you and I spoke a little bit before the interview, and the fact that you work with, you know, older people, and you were talking about the importance of social relationships for them, if you can talk about that a little bit.
Well, there's been some interesting, again, some sort of, you know, again, interesting research mm-hmm. on this idea in aging, does it matter? Because certainly, as I've said, the intimates are the most important in late life. There's no doubt about it. And people on their deathbed don't say, I wish I spent more time with the people, you know, in the golf club. They're talking about, you know, my kids and my family. So that's definitely there. But what's also interesting is that when they look at who people spend time with and how they're doing it in late life, the people who are avoiding cognitive declines, the people who are staying the healthiest, are also the people who are engaged with a lot of other kinds of people. They're doing volunteer work. They are engaged in various volunteer and other kinds of activities. They're involved in various clubs. They're just seeing acquaintances. And that does seem to have an effect on how well you do in late life, on your thinking, on your abilities to, you know, be physically fit, all of that. And we're not sure of why that is yet. We know it's out there. And we've seen it actually cross-culturally, too. It's shown up in Israel. It's shown up in Hong Kong. And it's shown up in the U.S. in research.
Oh, that's neat. And another thing that you write in your book that I really like is you say, quote, Hillary Clinton made famous the idea adopted from an old African proverb, it takes a village to raise children. Actually, it takes a collective of consequential strangers. I really like that. Well, this has been fabulous. I encourage everyone to get your book, Consequential Strangers, The Power of People Who Don't Seem to Matter But Really Matter. How can people find out more about you? Do you have a website?
Yes, it's called www.consequentialstrangers.com.
Okay.
There are excerpts of the book. I've been blogging about consequential strangers and kind of relating it to things that happen in the news. Just anything that kind of crosses my mind. And, you know, it's interesting. It's a topic that relates to everything because all of us every day are out there talking to new people and talking to old people, but it's all about relationships.